Have you ever wondered what it takes to become a six-figure Etsy shop? Well, in today's episode, we go into just that. I got to interview Brittany Lewis and dive into her brain and ask her all things Etsy. So Brittany has been a top 1% Etsy seller for over 10 years and now teaches other sellers to create a six-figure Etsy shop with print on demand. In this episode, we go into so many great topics, from what mistakes do new sellers make on Etsy, how she's able to get sales organically, why she decided to go on the print on demand route. We also go into mindset shifts that you need to have in order to have a successful Etsy shop. So excited for you guys to hear this episode. Welcome to the shit show of my 20s. My name's Sophia. I'm so glad you're here. My goal is to make your 20s a little less of a shit show. So with that, let's jump right into the episode.
So thank you so much, Brittany, for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to getting to know you. I'd love to start. Tell me about your 20s, and then tell me, like, one defining, like, shit show moment that you had in your 20s.
Okay, so I started my Etsy shop when I was 24. My entire 20s were a shit show, so narrowing it down to one is hard, but I have a lot pertaining to Etsy as well, so I'll give you guys one of those. But in general, my 20s were definitely a time for self-discovery, which is no big surprise. Everybody says that's the time when you find yourself. I was no exception. I think I was very lost between 20 and 25-ish. And then I started, like I said, my Etsy shop when I was 24. And once I sort of clicked into that and got some direction and saw that how much potential there was, I'm like, okay, I'm just throwing my entire life into this because it's so much fun. It totally lights me up. It feels so aligned with what I want to do. And so I just threw myself into it, and I found a lot of purpose and joy, and learned a lot about myself throughout that process. So I would say one of my biggest shit show moments was probably, I think I was 26, and I had started doing print on demand on Etsy at this point. And I was selling this hoodie, and it had a little, I've told this story on a podcast before, it had a little design that was like right here on the chest. It was very small and delicate and cute, and it sold like crazy. I was selling hundreds and hundreds of them. And I started getting messages from customers saying that half of the design was chopped off. And I contacted Printify, which is the print-on-demand provider that I work with, and they told me that I had not adhered to their guidelines of where, like, you're supposed to place the, they had changed it, where you're supposed to place the design. So they had made a change to where the guidelines were. So my design was sitting too high, and they just decided to print it anyways and ship them out. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of this hoodie had gone out to customers because it became like an immediate bestseller. I had to replace all of them. Long story short, it was probably the biggest shit show I can remember in not only like my 20s, but in terms of like my business as well. Like the most panic, the most money I had to spend. And just, it was something that was completely out of my hands. And I just knew I had to fix it. So I did. And it turned out to be just fine. I look back and laugh at it now, but it was an absolute catastrophe at the time.
Oh my gosh, that sounds stressful. To like know all these orders came out.
I mean, that is one of so many of those types of because you live and learn. You don't know until you know. And little things, like, you can be the most type A detail oriented person, and little things like that can slip by you so easy. There's just no way to avoid them. So I always tell my followers, students, whatever, just like expect the unexpected, expect to make really, really awful, terrible, stressful, big mistakes. So when they happen, and they inevitably will, you're prepared for it. Or you're not only prepared, but you're just expecting it, so it doesn't throw you off balance as much as it would if you weren't expecting to ever make a mistake.
Yeah, sure. And then, like, I'm curious why you, like, dove into, like, Etsy right away. Like, did you try any other platforms? What was it about Etsy that, like, really stood out to you?
So Etsy's a handmade platform, right? So I knew I shopped there a lot, and I loved how creative it was. I love that you can go to Etsy and see a bunch of unique stuff. You go to Amazon, you go to any other, like, Teespring, all of these other print-on-demand areas as well. You see a lot of the same stuff, and I loved the vibe of Etsy. I loved, like, the community feel. I loved the fact that it was so user-friendly. You didn't really have to guess about how to start a shop. when I was 22, I started like a home decor shop on Etsy. I just tested it out and I was like printing with my home printer these little like poster thing, or I guess it wouldn't be a poster. It was just like an 8.5 by 11 picture that I would print out and then I'd put it in a glass frame and ship it out. And almost every frame broke every single time. So that did not work out very well. So I quit that. And I revisited 2 years later when I started creating high-waisted shorts for myself. And I thought, you know what? Other girls have to want these too, because you couldn't find them anywhere at the time. And so I thought, what better place than Etsy to just get on there? I'm hand creating them myself. I'm cutting shorts from Goodwill. I'm painting on them, doing all this fun stuff. It just was such a no-brainer. It made so much sense as an Etsy customer myself. I was like, this is a literal no-brainer. I know that Etsy is the platform for this just because of my experience with it as a customer.
Yeah. And I'm curious, on the shorts, what type of designs did you do? And do you still do those shorts?
I don't do anything handmade now. I'm totally print on demand, which is where you have the partner manufacturer that prints and ships directly to customers on your behalf. So all you do is create designs and list your products. So I started with the high-waisted shorts. I did that for a few years. I was literally taking customers' measurements and with a measuring tape going to Goodwill and like measuring short pants, jeans, vintage jeans, and then going home, cutting them, putting them in the washer and dryer, and then painting on them. So my big first design was a galaxy print, which in 2014, it was everything. Everybody was all about galaxy print. So I had seen like an inspiration picture on Pinterest, but I couldn't find any galaxy print shorts being sold literally anywhere. It was just this one really beautiful photo. And I was like, I can recreate that. I can do it. So I went to Michael's. I got some fabric paint. I tested it. It worked really well. And those, I think I sold my first pair of galaxy shorts within 24 hours of opening my shop. And so once I got the first sale, I was like, okay, I knew I was on something, but now I have the proof. So I'm just going to go full on. And I, from there, created like daisy print shorts with I used a stencil. I put studs in shorts, like metal studs. I did unicorn shorts, a bunch of different like stencil sort of stuff. I did mandala shorts. I just went to Michael's and went crazy. I was there literally like 6 times a day, just buying stuff and testing new things and learning more about my customer and building out on whatever it was that was working at the time.
This seems so cute.
It was so much fun. I was in heaven. I still am in heaven when I get to design stuff. But in the beginning, when I was still like figuring it out and putting the puzzle pieces together, there was nothing more fun than that time in my life.
Yeah, that's so cool. And then from there, like, what made you transition to print on demand?
Yeah, so I found print on demand probably 2017, I want to say. I'm not really sure on the exact date, but I discovered Printful. And I was like, there's just no way. This is too good to be true. Because I had started screen printing my own t-shirts as well. So not only was I doing high-waisted shorts, I was screen printing tank tops and sweatshirts and t-shirts. And I had a 2-bedroom apartment at the time. And one of the rooms was like this giant screen printing machine. And it was always a million degrees in that room because you have to use the heat press and all this sort of stuff after. And I actually hated it. It was my least favorite thing to do. I know a lot of people are super passionate about screen printing and love it. I was not one of those people. I hated the production side of what I was doing. It took me so like all day, every day. I was just screen printing and creating stuff and painting. And like the galaxy stuff was really fun at first. But when you're on your 1,000th galaxy short, you're like, okay, I'm over it. I'm done. And then like the paints were selling out and then the cost went up and I couldn't find them. And like all of this stuff happened where I was like, the production side of this sucks. And there's such a ceiling to it. Like I know with my creative ability at this point, I'm capable of so much more, but I can't keep up as a one woman show doing all of this production myself. So when I found print on demand, I was like, this is way too good to be true. It sounds way too easy. So I looked into it more. And when I discovered it was in fact as good as it looked, I just went full on 100% committed to that. And I slowly switched everything over to that and just went to t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies.
And how do you come up with all the designs?
So my main thing with Be a Wolf Biz, my Etsy consulting business, is I teach people that the most important thing about six-figure sales on Etsy is becoming an expert on what's in demand. So if you can become an expert on what people are actually actively searching for in terms of t-shirts, sweatshirts, and hoodies in my realm, because those are the highest profit margins with the most opportunity from my perspective, if you can become an expert on that and commit yourself fully to the behaviors and actions that it takes to build your expertise in terms of demand, you don't really have to know a whole lot else. If you just focus on what I call brain priming and building your mental archive, which is that place in your subconscious that basically holds all of the details you're seeing about what's in demand. All you have to do is look through stuff and research. You don't have to have spreadsheets or anything official. You just have to research and observe things and allow your brain to soak that up. That's how you become an expert in understanding the details of what people are actually wanting. So there's many different methodologies I teach on how to do this. One of the main ones is like starting your own exclusive trend spotting Instagram account. So you're not showing anything to anybody. You can set it to private, but you just open a dedicated Instagram account to trend spotting. You can follow a bunch of inspo accounts. They can be t-shirt accounts. They can be illustration accounts. They can be anything, stickers, like anything that can, anything that has products that are in demand that people would be interested in. You follow a bunch of those. You check it every morning like the morning newspaper, right? You read it like the morning newspaper. You just absorb and you kind of just set your day around brain priming whenever you can. I always say I'm at the grocery store on Pinterest. I'm, you know, on a bathroom break on Etsy looking at bestsellers, like anything, anytime you are researching and filling up your mental archive to the point when you sit down to design, it just sort of flows out of you. Like people watch me design or do design critiques at this point. I've been doing this for 10 years. So I have a very large mental archive, done a lot of research, and it looks effortless. People are like, how do I get to that level to where I can design like you? You don't even try. And I'm like, well, I tried for 10 years. I did all this research. I have so much time spent understanding and learning about what's in demand that when I sit down to design, my subconscious does the work for me. I do it very, very quickly. And for me, even it feels effortless. It looks really effortless. And most of the time it feels very effortless because my subconscious is doing the work. My subconscious has made the connections. And when I sit down to design, it just sort of happens. And that's why committing to the research and building your mental archive over time is the one most valuable thing I believe a print-on-demand seller can do for themselves.
I love that. And that's great to like train yourself to be able to spot those trends and be able to do your own take on those trends. And I'm curious, do you have to be like artistic or like great at drawing or like how do you piece that all together?
Absolutely not. No, I am the worst at drawing. I'm not a graphic designer. I have no experience whatsoever. I say I'm an assembler. I put fonts and design elements together and you don't have to use Adobe Illustrator. Like I exclusively use Canva. You don't have to use Photoshop. You don't have to be able to do any of that stuff. You just have to be able to put stuff together in ways that are very simple. Like, especially on Etsy, people want simple. Everybody thinks they need, like, the more complex the design, the more high demand it's going to be, the more sales they're going to make. Nothing could be further from the truth. Usually the more complex the design is, the less sales it gets. So I had a bestseller in my shop for like 3 years. I had a bestseller badge. It was wild how long this was a bestseller. It was a word, a single word in a sans serif font on top. Design element that was just an outline and then another single word sans serif font at the bottom. It was the least complex design ever. Literally word, design element, word. And it had a bestseller badge for a year. It made me thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. And it was mind-blowingly simple. And that's really what I try to teach my students is if you can get good enough to be able to create simplicity with demand, you've unlock that six-figure trajectory pretty easily.
I love that you say that, like, it doesn't have to be complicated because I feel like in our head, we always like to make things complicated. But going back to simple and knowing that simple could work.
Not only can simple work, is simple is the most thing that works, the biggest thing that works. If you look on Etsy and you use any filter to show you like star sellers or best sellers or whatever, almost all of those designs, if you really pay attention to the details of them, they're going to be a design element and a few words or even just a quote. Like there's so many Etsy t-shirts with bestseller badges that are literally just words on a shirt, but they have emotional connection, which is something I talk about a lot as well, is emotion is what creates purchases. So when you're able to tap into what people are buying things for on an emotional level and you're able to understand like what's the emotion behind this, whether it's humor or it's faith-based niches or it's cottagecore, like why are people emotionally drawn to these trends? Because trends are created because of the emotions beneath them. So if you can tap into that emotion directly enough, people are going to buy your stuff no matter what because emotions are what create those purchases. And I think this is also something that a lot of people overlook is they're just like, well, how do I make sales faster? How can I get better at designing? And it's like, you need to understand your customer better. It always comes back to customers. If you're 110% customer focused, you really can't lose because you're always just trying to be the best you can be at supplying what people are actually looking to buy. When you look at that as an equation, nothing could make more sense, right? If you can master what people are looking for, they're always going to be buying your stuff. And not only that, But the organic algorithm, which is what I teach people to hack really on Etsy, is also going to be your best friend for life, because the algorithm's main purpose is to push listings to the top of search pages that are doing really well, getting a lot of attention from customers. That's the only job of the algorithm. Get the listings that people want to the top of search results. So instead of trying to hack the algorithm, just get really good at listing things that people are actually looking for and they actually want on an emotional level.
I have to ask you because I have no idea what it meant. What is cottagecore?
Cottagecore is, it's been trending since 2020. So it really blew up in 2020. It's very Taylor Swift vibes. It's like cozy, Nordic, Alaskan, Icelandic. There's a bunch of different words for it. Hygge is another one. It's basically just like a really cozy trend. It has a lot to do with like nature and kind of like an organic feel, like wool sweaters and cottages and the forest and cute baby animals and all this sort of stuff. It really, really blew up on Etsy in 2020 and just the world as a whole. It started on TikTok, I believe.
I like it. Seems cozy.
Yes.
Do you watch TikTok as well for trends on clothing?
So
really on Instagram.
So I mostly will deliberately trend spot on Instagram because TikTok, it's a little bit more difficult. There's just a lot more. You can't target accounts as specifically as you can on Instagram. Like Instagram, you can follow specifically an illustration account. But there's not really like upcoming trend accounts on TikTok. So absolutely, it's a place to be informed. But knowing what to search and how to search it, like you have to have a specific starting point. It's a little bit more convoluted than Instagram.
Okay, cool. And it can also get you into a trap as well of time. Time just going down.
So. Right, because you get distracted. And the same could happen on Instagram, but I feel just somehow Instagram's a little bit more focused.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm curious, like, how long did it take you to, like, see progress on Etsy? Like, how long did it take you to become, like, top seller? I'm curious, like, your numbers and how long it took you to make six figures as well.
For sure. So before I start in on this, I will start with a caveat of I get this question a lot. People say, you know, if I take your master course, how long until I'm making six figures? And I always tell them, unfortunately, no one gets the privilege of a timeline. Because your success, your level of success, your level of acceleration, how fast you go is 110% completely based on the seller's commitment and competency and how closely they're following the stuff that really works. You know, I say my blueprint that I give in my master course, it's tested and proven a million times over. I have thousands of testimonials of people hitting six figures and doing really well, really fast. However, the blueprint is tested and proven. If you follow how I do things, it will work. However, it's not going to work if you apply a little bit in a month and then take 4 months off and then come back and apply a little bit more. Like, it's so dependent on how committed the seller is. So I never, ever, ever give people a timeline. I have had students that start seeing sales in 3 weeks and take off within 3 months. I had one of my students have a $200,000 month after joining my master course 2 months prior. She had a $200,000 month on Etsy selling with print on demand. Like, it was mind-blowingly wild. That was probably the biggest explosion that I've seen the fastest. Obviously, it's not going to happen like that for everybody. I have had students who within 6 months start shifting onto that six-figure trajectory. Usually within the first year, people start getting really close to six figures. For me, I hit six figures within, I think it was like 16 to 18 months back in 2014 when I first started. So it was quite quickly. But that timeline, I hate to even talk about timing because people are like, okay, I'll give it a year then. And it's like, no, don't even put that on yourself because you could do it so much faster or it might happen so much slower. Like, don't even put those limitations around yourself. Just start now and do the absolute best you can and commit as hard as you can every single day and let things unfold as they need to, because that's really all that you can do.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, for your students, what do you notice is like the common theme between the ones that do the best versus maybe the ones who go through your course and don't do as well?
Super good question. The ones that do very well, very fast. And I think a lot of times my students who haven't hit that level yet are frustrated by hearing me say this, but the ones who do very well, very fast are customer focused. They're not asking, where are my results? How do I get results faster. They're not hiring people on Fiverr to get them on the first page of search results, right? They're not hiring graphic designers. They're becoming the expert themselves. And they're always focused on their customer, how to understand them emotionally, how to give them more of what they're actually actively looking for. They're also basing all of their decisions on data. So another big part of what I teach is using E-Rank in a very specific way. I have a very specific E-Rank strategy to leverage real customer data in order to make all of your decisions. So you're not just throwing stuff at the wall and guessing and being like, oh, I like this, so I hope it works. You're actually seeing based on specific numbers, like, okay, this is a good idea or this isn't a good idea. So let me go ahead and try that. So my top sellers are the ones that follow the blueprint they're really by the book and they're really customer focused and they're not in my DMs asking, Brittany, I'm taking your course. I feel like I'm doing everything right, but my sales aren't happening yet. They're too busy becoming more of an expert to ask those questions. They're not worried about the results. They know results come as a byproduct of doing the right work. So they're really, really focused on doing the right work first and foremost. And they're usually very obsessed with research as well. They have a like all consuming drive to just do more research all the time, because again, that ties in directly to how do I become better at giving my customer what they're actually actively looking for.
Yeah, and I'm curious, like, once you do your research, so let's say you have a design you think is good, is there any way of really testing that the design is good before putting it on Etsy? Or are you kind of like, I'm like at 90% with this one, let's just put it out there? I'm curious, like, your thoughts.
Yeah, the testing is listing, and it's taking the seriousness out of that. A lot of people are like, I have so many listings saved in my drafts, I'm scared to test them, I don't know if it's good enough, I don't know, I'm like, literally just test it. If you want to test that 90% design, and then you think of a better idea and you change it up a little bit, list that one too. Like, it's 20 cents a listing. Get your experiments out there. You're going to get better over time. Take the seriousness out of it. And if you're worried about your friends and family seeing your designs that suck or whatever, keep it a secret. Don't tell anybody what you're doing. Like, don't announce your shop to your personal Instagram and then do this huge launch and then expect all this stuff to happen. Like, too many people are too entitled to thinking that just because they're listing things on Etsy that they should be making sales. You get the level of results that you deserve. And what you deserve is based on the work that you're putting in and how seriously you're taking your expertise development. So keep it private. List things that you feel have potential. If they don't work, it doesn't matter. If they do work, amazing. You can do more like that. So it's taking the seriousness and the fear around, like, is this going to work or is this not going to work? And taking any of your failures as people see it and kind of turning those on their head, being like, it's not a reflection. If something doesn't work, it's not a reflection of me, my competency, or my potential. It's just the fact that this thing didn't work. And that happens to mega shops all the time. Even once they're mega shops, 80% of their listings don't sell. That's what people don't understand. Mega shops are mega shops because probably 10 to 20% of their listings carry their entire shop. They tried 80% of things that didn't work, but most people don't have the wherewithal to stick with it long enough and go through all of those failures of things not working to find the stuff that does. They quit before they start finding the stuff that does because they think they're not good at it or they don't have the potential or whatever. They tell themselves all these stories, which leads them directly to the exit because they're like, I don't want to keep doing this. I'm not made for it. Or Etsy doesn't. The story a lot of people say is Etsy favors only big shops and new sellers don't have a chance or whatever. And it's not true. You could start on Etsy like I did, list something that actually has demand and make a sale in 24 hours as a brand new shop. I see it happen all the time. The algorithm is your best friend if you're providing what people are actually looking for. And when you are providing what people are actually looking for, you'll know because you'll make sales. The Etsy algorithm is really, really, really good at being able to help you push listings that are effective, that people actually want to the top.
That's so interesting. You said 80% of what the mega shops have don't sell. Because, like, I assume that anything they make sells just automatically because they know.
Right. But it's not. I mean, that's just not the way that it works. If you see, most mega sellers will have like 10 pages of listings. If you actually take the time to go look through all those listings, you'll find maybe 10 of them have bestseller badges out of 1,000, 2,000, 4,000 listings. And it doesn't mean, if you're a mega seller, it doesn't mean every design that you put out becomes a hit. Nobody is a wizard like that. You just have to keep testing throughout the lifetime of your shop. You know, I've been selling on Etsy for 10 years. I put a lot of stuff up that still doesn't work. And it doesn't matter. I put it up. I hope it works. And if it doesn't, I don't ever think about it again. Like, I'm not hovering over my listings and being like, did it work? Did it work? Why hasn't it worked yet? Is it working? I have a lot of students that do that. And they hover over their stats. And they're like, okay, I got 3 views today. I hope tomorrow it's more. It's just like, no, create your design, put it out. And if it works, you'll know. because you're getting purchases and you'll see it. If it doesn't work, you don't ever have to think about it again. You just keep moving forward and focusing on getting better at creating stuff that does work.
And are you only doing organic on Etsy? Do you ever do any ads?
So I am self-titled the organic queen because I really built my shop organically almost exclusively. So I tell people that ads are the icing on the cake. They should happen. You should turn ads on when you already are really well established organically. Because again, when you're doing things the right way, when you have stuff that people actually want, the algorithm will push your listings to the top. I see it happen constantly. You just have to actually be good at it. Again, you get the results you deserve. The algorithm's going to be on your side if you're doing the right stuff. So I tell people, you think ads are going to be a shortcut, right? You think if I can create items and then turn ads on, it'll push my listings to the top. More people will see them and more people will want them. What actually ends up happening is people start, they're creating designs that basically suck. Nobody wants them because they're new and they don't know anything yet. They haven't done a lot of research. They don't have a very big mental archive. They want to list these items, turn ads on, and they think the more people see them, the more people will buy them. What they're actually doing is pushing listings, giving listings more visibility that nobody wanted to begin with. So sure, people might see them, but nobody's buying them because you're not good at creating designs people want yet. So you can't actually skip the line. There is no getting around becoming an expert in demand. There's no sneaky little ways of getting around that. You actually have to put in the work and become a really, really, really good expert level designer, not in terms of technicality, but in terms of demand. You don't have to be good at creating complex stuff. You have to be good at creating stuff people are actually actively searching for. I sound like a broken record, but everything always ties back to that. So ads should be turned on optionally. Even the revenue I made from ads was minuscule compared to what I was making organically, like a couple $1,000 more, honestly, once I was already really moving and grooving with my organic stuff. Ads were just a couple $1,000 more. And that was only because I already had the listings that I knew people wanted. So when I was pushing them, when they were getting more visibility, I already knew that people wanted them because they had previously been buying them organically. So when people saw them, a few more were buying them because they were seeing them with ads. But there is no shortcut to faster success aside from mastering demand first.
Yeah. And I'm curious for you, how much do you focus on like SEO within the listing? Is that something you should focus on? Can you just like throw up the listing? I'm curious about your process there.
Yeah. SEO is really important. SEO is not the most important. So demand is the most important thing. The fact that people are searching for what you're selling is the most important thing. SEO is helpful. Every part of your listing should be optimized because you want to set yourself up for success in as many ways as possible. Why wouldn't you? You want to help the algorithm make it as easy as possible to get your listings to the top or to get in front of the right people, the right audience, the right shoppers. So my E-Rank strategy coincides with my SEO strategy as well, as you're using E-Rank to choose keywords based on data. You're choosing the products you're selling based on E-Rank, and you're also creating your titles and tags based on E-Rank. So every decision that you're making in terms of visibility and getting found in search results is based in E-Rank because you want to base it in data. So you're not guessing and throwing stuff at the wall. So titles and tags, I do teach a very specific way of how to do them, how to choose the keywords to use, and a couple other technical things about that. However, most people put way too much emphasis on it. They think SEO is how they're going to create a booming business, and it's not. SEO is like a support beam. It will help you get there, but it's not the thing that gets you there. So using E-Rank or Marmalade or some sort of like data, customer Etsy data collection is really important in product selection and in SEO. But understanding like research and brain priming and mental archive building, like I was talking about earlier, is so much more important. There are lots of Etsy listings. People come to me all the time. They're like, Brittany, how could this have a bestseller badge? It has three words in the title. And I say, it has demand. The algorithm's really good at connecting listings. If it has demand, even if the SEO is really shitty, like it could have one word and have a bestseller badge. You see that all the time on Etsy. So people are like, well, I don't have to care about SEO then. It's like, no, you do. It'll still help you. But that's a really good example of why demand is actually king and SEO is just a support beam. Hmm.
Demand is everything. It's everything. And how often are you creating new listings? Do you have like a method on like you should always be creating new designs, or do you kind of just like put designs up there and then like just let them run?
Yeah, I don't actually speak anything in specific numbers. Like I'm never going to tell people, oh, you need to be doing 10 listings a week or 10 listings a day or whatever. I don't have any specific recommendations on that. I think you should always be creating. You should always be putting stuff out there. If we go back to how I was talking about how mega sellers, 20% of their listings are selling, 80% aren't, they're always trying new stuff. They're always sifting and sorting. That worked, that didn't, that works really well, do more of that. So the process of building out on what's working should be an ever, like constant evergreen thing that you're doing. It's like, I'm always looking at what's working and I'm optimizing it. I'm refining it. I'm trying to do more of it. I'm putting it on different products. I'm trying different similar designs, all of this sort of stuff. I have what's called the scientist detective gymnast phase system, which is where you're, as a scientist, you're doing research and creating hypotheses on what you think will work based on your research. As a detective, you're taking a magnifying glass to your shop and saying, okay, what's working and what isn't. And as a gymnast, you're building out on the things that are working. You're getting really flexible and listening to what your customers are telling you with their purchases or views or favorites or whatever. And you're allowing yourself to be flexible. You're not one of those sellers that's like, no, I want to be in the bike niche, or I only want to sell bunny designs. You're like, okay, this is what the customer is telling me they want. I'm going to do more of that regardless of how I feel about it. I'm following the data and not my personal preferences.
And are you doing like seasonal designs as well, or do you focus mainly on just like everyday designs that could be used?
Yeah, it's such good questions. So seasonal designs are what most people start on Etsy. It's what they go for. They're like, okay, well, if I'm selling on Etsy, I should create Valentine's Day shirts. I should create Christmas shirts. I should do this. I should do that. And the reality is those areas are already really well covered by almost every Etsy seller ever. So I teach what's called trend combining, and it's being able to take multiple things that are in demand at one time and blending them together really, really well. So you're reaching multiple different audiences and you're creating, if you're doing it correctly, hyper trending designs. So I teach people, if you are to create a Christmas design, make it a trend combination. So take whatever's currently trending, say like cottagecore. If cottagecore was huge this year and you know that, and you've been really successful in it in your shop already, or you know that you could be, take Christmas and make it cottagecore. So you're blending in what's already been really, really trendy and in demand from the rest of the year, and you're making it Christmas, or you're making it Valentine's Day, or you're making it whatever, Thanksgiving, whatever sort of holiday is coming up. But I don't necessarily recommend people do that because not everybody's really good at trend combining yet. I recommend people just focus on demand in general. Because like for Christmas, people are buying Christmas presents of stuff that isn't Christmas related, that's been trending the whole year. So if you're doing what you're supposed to throughout the entire year, your sales will boom in Q4 no matter what, because you've already been keeping up with demand. You already have in your shop what people are looking for. So they're going to buy those as Christmas presents, and people see that all the time. So it's a really common myth that you have to create Christmas-based designs in order to make a lot of Christmas sales in December. You can if you trend combine correctly, but certainly not creating a shirt that says Merry Christmas with holiday lights around it. Like that's not going to get you anywhere. So trend combining does take a lot of creativity, and it requires at least a medium-sized mental archive. You got to do quite a bit of work and research and allowing that those details of what's in demand to sink into your brain before you're able to trend combine in the way that actually creates designs that people are looking for.
That's such a good point. I forgot about how many Etsy sellers already have something with Christmas.
All of them
are going to be competing against. Yeah, might as well do something new. What is your advice to someone who's maybe created like 20 designs, like they think they're good, nothing's kind of moving? Like, what advice do you have for them to maybe like stay motivated or trying when it feels like anything they create is just like falling flat?
Yeah, I have a lot of advice for those people. 20 designs, first of all, is not enough. I see so many people come to me and they're like, Brittany, nothing's working. I feel like I'm doing everything right. I haven't made any sales. I've been on Etsy for 2 whole weeks, and I go to their shop and they have 20 listings. I'm like, first of all, you're supposed to suck right now. The learning curve exists for a reason. It's just like learning to play piano. If you sit down at a piano and I tell you to play Mozart, you're going to feel like an absolute fool trying to play Mozart. People get on Etsy and they expect six-figure results as if they're trying to play Mozart sitting down immediately at a piano. It's like, it doesn't make sense. I don't know why people see print on demand that way, and they don't view playing the piano or learning how to play basketball or baseball or like any sport, any skill requires a learning curve where you sit down first and you suck at it. And you understand, I suck because I'm new. I'm suck because I don't know anything yet. I'm suck I suck because I haven't tried a bunch of things and failed at a bunch of things and had little wins and learned. And like, you don't just get to hop on and because you put stuff out, win big. Like, it doesn't work that way. There's an actual learning curve and it requires actual skill because it's a skill like anything else. So the people that are like, I'm not making any progress, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, it's because you're at the beginning of the learning curve. And this is when a lot of people quit, because the learning curve in any new skill is difficult. There's so much uncertainty. There's so much friction. There's so much you don't know. And so most people quit a couple steps into the learning curve because it's uncomfortable. But when you apply the same thing with print on demand, again, to like playing piano, would you sit there and think, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm never going to be able to do this? Maybe, but more than likely you'd understand, if it was something that you really wanted, you'd understand, I just have to stick with it. I just have to keep practicing. I just have to play this one song until I'm really good at it. And then I can move up to another song. That's the learning curve that makes sense in our brain. But people, for some reason, don't apply it to print on demand. So if you have 20 listings, it's not enough. You don't know anything about your customers yet. You haven't gathered any data. You don't know absolutely anything. So of course you're not making sales yet, right? And somebody might say, well, Brittany, you listed these high-waisted shorts and made sales within 24 hours. Yeah, because I, at that time, the reason why I started selling those things was because I saw a gap in the market. Nobody else was selling high-waisted shorts. And I thought, this is a really good opportunity. And I found something that I knew would hit. And a lot of people don't have that opportunity, or they don't have that right off the bat. In terms of just like knowing something is really going to work very well. And I could have listed that and it didn't work as well, but I just had this feeling. So most people will have to fumble around in the dark for a lot longer before they find the light switch. But the problem is that most people quit before they find the light switch. The light switch is there, but they don't like fumbling around in the dark. They don't want to go through the learning curve. They think that they should be getting immediate success. There's an entitlement as well that I talk about often, that sellers just need to drop. Drop your ego, drop any entitlement you have around deserving sales, because you don't deserve them until you put in the work and the actual time. These six-figure sellers, the seller that I had that was doing $200,000 months, she didn't open a shop and get to $200,000 months, right? Like, she was doing research day in and day out and talking to her customers and constantly on Instagram, constantly on Pinterest, constantly studying bestsellers. Like, she put in the work to make things happen that quickly. And you don't get to have those results without having put in the work and going through sort of like, I call it the fires of the learning curve. You have to be sharpened by that friction. And so allowing it is what allows you to pass through into those opportunities of growth where you start actually seeing movement. You have to stick with it long enough, but you also have to get the right resources, because a person could stick with listing things and creating designs for a year, but they're not actually getting better because they haven't learned from anybody that's already been there. They're not in any courses. They're not being taught by anybody. So they're just trying a bunch of things and they're seeing a bunch of failure and they're not actually improving. They're just putting more stuff out. So action is really important, but it has to go hand in hand with education. You have to actually know what you're doing in order to start fumbling around with it. If you're just fumbling around and guessing and trying and doing all this stuff and it's not working, it's because you're not actually building on your knowledge and your education. You're just fumbling around. It's like, you might be able to teach yourself piano, but most people wouldn't be able to teach themselves how to play Mozart, right? They need an instructor. They need somebody who knows the basics and the foundational strategic elements of how to get there, as opposed to just being like, I'll just keep playing Mary Had a Little Lamb until I reach Mozart. It's not how it works. And it's the same thing with print on demand.
And so many of these elements just apply to everything in life, right? And everything in life, you want a teacher. Yes, you're going to be fumbling in the dark. Are you going to be willing to outstand like learning and the whole process so you can actually get to the other side and see the light? Or are you just going to do something else and not get through that process?
Which is what most people end up doing, right? They end up bunny hopping from thing to thing to thing to thing because they stick with the first three or four steps in the learning curve of that. Decide this might be faster. This might not have a learning curve, which people don't think of it in terms of learning curve, but that's really what they mean, is maybe it won't be as hard. And so I see this a ton. People are skipping around from business model to business model to business model just because they don't have the wherewithal to stick with something through the learning curve, because it is by nature always going to feel difficult.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, have you or any of your students like ventured out to like Shopify or any other platforms, or like what keeps you like within Etsy?
Yeah, so Shopify is great. Obviously, there's no built-in traffic stream. So the really valuable part about Etsy is there's 96 million shoppers on there searching for products to buy per year. Etsy is also directly integrated with Google. So if you type in cottagecore shirt, let's use that again, into Google, the first listings that you're going to see in the shopping section are going to be Etsy listings. And it's the most valuable thing. A lot of people have no idea that that's how it works, but Etsy's always been directly integrated with Google. So a lot of people, even if they don't know what Etsy is, a lot of shoppers will end up shopping on Etsy because they find it through Google. So not only do we have this $96 million built-in shopping stream, we have the addition of Google shoppers as well. And that algorithm is really useful when you're creating for demand, as I've talked about this whole episode. But Shopify is a whole other beast. You're driving traffic. That's a whole other strategy, a whole other beast. It also works. It also can work really well. But it's almost like I say, would you rather set up a shop or would you rather set up a, like, say we're talking about this in terms of a craft table. Would you rather set up a craft table in a mall that already has 96 million people strolling through it? Or do you want to open your own craft table that's miles away that you're going to have to market to get people to come to at all? So it doesn't really, when you compare it in that way, it's like, well, of course I'm going to the mall that's already got 96 million people because then I don't have to do as much work. You don't have to put any ad budget in, all of that sort of stuff. It's a rough analogy, but you understand what I'm saying. And being able to have that crowd already there, there's just nothing more valuable than that. So I tell people, if you want to have a plan B, you can open a Shopify eventually, but just start with Etsy. And Etsy is a really amazing place to test as well. So if you want to eventually have your own website, I always say start with Etsy because you can test on their traffic stream. And the products that work, you can list on Shopify and then run ads to it if you really want to. But when we're talking from like a newbie e-commerce business standpoint, it's a no-brainer to start where the people, where the shoppers already are. Yeah. And it's low cost as well.
I had no idea it was integrated with Google.
Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah.
And that's why people will say like, well, men don't shop on Etsy. I don't want to sell men stuff. And I tell them they Google. Men Google things. They'll find your listings. And most of the time men will Google something. They'll find the listing on Etsy and they'll buy it. And they have no idea they just bought a product from Etsy, right? They don't even look. It's just like, oh, that'll work. So yes, men shop on Etsy mostly because Google's directly integrated.
It's so funny. Men Google things too. Crazy concept. And I'm like curious, like your strategy on pricing, and do you have like particular like profit margins you like to hit with all your products? And like, how do you know if you're pricing correctly or too high?
I'm actually about to publish a really, really in-depth post on this on Instagram. So if your listeners want to follow me, it's BeaWolfBiz, BeaWolfBiz. And a lot of people, the reason why I'm doing this post is because it's the number one skeptic remark I see is, well, I try print on demand, but profit margins are zero to nothing. Like nobody can make any real money. And I see people making real money all the time. My students are buying their dream beach house. They're going to Disney World with their family. Like they're buying new cars. They're doing all this incredible stuff because of their print on demand shops. So I know that's not the truth. The problem is, what people don't understand is you're in control of your pricing. To say print on demand has low profit margins makes no sense. You as the seller are setting the pricing. So how could it be that just by default, print on demand it doesn't make sense. So for me, like I say, t-shirts should be anywhere between $24 and $32. I use Printify as the print on demand provider, and there's multiple providers underneath the Printify umbrella. You can choose which one based on color choice, or they have separate pricing as well. So you can choose based on your preferences. But for the most part, I say, you know, $24 to $32. And then $3.50 shipping. So most customers are going to pay anywhere around $27.50 with shipping. If you're setting it at $24, $3.50 shipping, which is more than acceptable. And people will pay over $30 for a t-shirt. If you look at PacSun or Urban Outfitters or whatever, they're charging $45, $50 for a regular ass t-shirt. So people will pay for t-shirts that they want. And like I said, t-shirts, sweatshirts, and hoodies are where I focus. People say, well, can't I sell other products? Of course you can. But t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies are the products that I've found do allow you the highest profit margins to set your prices highest and have that best markup with the most opportunity. So they're just kind of a no-brainer for me. Yes, you can sell shower curtains or stickers or whatever, but you're just not going to make a whole lot of money in the easiest way selling those things. Sweatshirts and hoodies are kind of a different thing. I don't like to throw out numbers for that. All of my pricing strategy I outline in my master course, Top Seller Secret. the pricing for those vary a lot based on the brand you're choosing or the colors or whatever. So that's kind of a different story. But I always tell people, just look at kind of the median of what's being sold on Etsy with your competition, and then run the numbers in terms of all your fees, and then see what makes the most sense, right? I like to aim for anywhere between 40 and 50% profit margins. The post that I'm going to do on Instagram in a bit is based on selling the Gildan 5000 t-shirts, which are just like a really basic shirt. I've sold them the entire time that I've sold on Etsy. People are really into comfort colors right now too, which I recommend anywhere between $30 and $32. But for the Gildan 5000, I recommend doing the $24, $350 shipping, and then at least, well, I'd say 4 to 5 colors, keeping it really limited. But it just really depends. You can charge $22 if you want to make a little bit less. You can and maybe try to sell more if you're brand new, trying to gain some momentum. I don't really recommend that. I think, like I said, if people want it, they'll buy it regardless of the price. But it's a big conversation, right? But I think the summary of it is you set the prices and people are willing to pay much more than you probably think. And a really important point is that you don't have to compete with the shops that are selling t-shirts for $11 on Etsy. That's another big skeptic thing. People are like, well, how could I ever sell a $24 t-shirt next to an $11 t-shirt? People are doing it every day, all the time. If you go look at the bestseller badges, again, the best way to break through all of the skepticism is looking at the actual proof. There are most bestseller badge listings on Etsy are t-shirts that are $24 to $35 even. A lot of the lower priced t-shirts have bestseller badges as well, but it's correlation doesn't equal causation. You know, like it doesn't mean just because they're $11, they got the bestseller badge. If they were priced higher, they could have as well. So you don't have to compete with that lower price. You don't have to sell below $20 t-shirts to gain momentum. It's a matter of, guess what? Demand.
I love it. Back to demand. Demand is everything that we need to focus on, especially at the beginning. What is some mistakes you feel like new sellers make on it?
I think everything we just talked about is based on the mistakes that I've seen new sellers making. So like thinking they got to price their products at $14, not focusing on demand, thinking SEO is king, right? Quitting after they've listed 20 things and it hasn't worked. Thinking that mega sellers are selling every listing that they ever list and it's becoming a bestseller and not recognizing that 80-20 rule, right? I'd say the biggest is taking a bunch of action, but not adding in the education piece like we talked about as well. So a lot of new sellers will be like, I've been trying. And I'm like, okay, who are you learning from? And they're like, well, nobody. I'm just like sort of going for it. And they're not even doing research. They're just like putting stuff out there. And most of the time, this is kind of a separate but similar issue, is they will have an idea in their head of this fantastic shop they want that's all about, let's say, tulips. Somebody that's like a huge tulip fan. They're like, I want a tulip shop with all of these tulip t-shirts. Can you help me sell more tulip stuff? And I'll be like, well, maybe, but maybe not. What's the data say? Like, unless you're making your decisions based on data, you can't just decide you want to sell something and then try to make it work. It doesn't work that way. If nobody's looking for it, nobody's going to buy it. So I'd probably say that's the number one issue I see with new sellers, is they think there's some strategy that's going to make people buy more of what they've got, even if people aren't actively searching for it or want it. And I don't know why that's a thing, because it doesn't logically make sense when you break it down. But I think people just think that's how it works. Like, well, if I just have the right marketing strategy, if I spend enough on ads, then people will buy my stuff. Nobody wants tulip t-shirts, right? If we look at the E-Rank stuff and it's showing us nobody's looking for that, or maybe a million sellers are already selling it. Like, what actually makes sense? And what, when it comes down to the numbers, and like I said, I have a really precise E-Rank strategy to break this down and make it very, very simple. It's not about thousands of different numbers and spreadsheets and complex equations. It's literally color-coded on E-Rank. A toddler could do it. When you break it down, does it make sense from a logical standpoint to sell tulip t-shirts? And if not, find something else that does based on the data. Be flexible enough to let go of the stuff you wanted to sell so you can sell stuff that actually sells.
Yeah, and I'm curious, you mentioned a bunch of different like mental shifts that helped you with your store. Are there any that you haven't mentioned that you feel like are really important if you want to have a successful Etsy store?
Yeah, there's so many. I'm always talking about mindset stuff to my students, because I think it's half the pie. People think strategy is like 90% and then 10% mindset. It's 50% strategy, 50% mindset. Because if you're not thinking like a mega seller, you're not going to be making mega seller decisions. And if you're not making mega seller decisions, you're not getting mega seller results. So people think they can think like a non-mega seller and then end up with six figures. And that's not how it works. works. You have to think like a mega seller before you become the mega seller, so you can make those mega seller decisions that lead you to the six-figure results. So I think the biggest shift is just dropping your ego, not worrying about what your results mean about you. Like I always say this, your like micro failures or whatever, I fail a million times a day, probably. I try all these different things and they don't work. And I don't think of them as failures. It's just like, I tried that to test it, to see if it worked and it didn't work. It doesn't mean I'm stupid. It means I tried something to gather information about whether or not it makes sense and will work. And that's all it is. It's just data, right? It has no reflection on me or my competency or my potential or what I'm capable of in the future. It's literally just helping me grow because I know not to try it again or to try it in a different way. So I think the biggest mindset shift is just being able to completely drop your ego about things. This journey is not about you as the seller. You are doing it to get results, sure. But in order to get results, you have to completely forget about results. You have to only think about your customer. How can I give my customer more? So most people are asking, how do I get more sales faster? They're like, me. How do I sell what I want to sell? How do I sell more of what I want to sell? How do I get more sales? How do I get more traffic? How do I get more people to see my listings? And if you can successfully flip that entirely, which requires dropping your ego, then all of a sudden it becomes all about your shoppers, the people that are looking for your stuff. You get to have fun with learning more about them and how to serve them better. So every single one of my mega sellers is a server. They're totally committed to serving customers. Like, you like that design? They might reach out to somebody that bought a design. It's like, what did you like about it? What else can I do for you? Like, I used to have conversations about my customers. I became a rave and festival wear shop. And they'd be like, can I get this in 2 to 3 weeks because I'm going to Coachella? And I'd be like, yeah. What other stuff would you like to see in the shop? What else would make sense to buy with these shorts? And then I started selling fanny packs and flower crowns and glitter kits and mermaid shirts. And I was just listening to them. And it wasn't like, it wasn't coming from a place of how do I get more sales, even though as a byproduct, it brought me more sales, but it was coming from the energy of how can I give you more stuff that you want? How can I help you have a better time at Coachella because you feel so cute with the stuff that you're wearing, right? That's that underlying emotion. Like, why are people buying these Galaxy shorts from me for Coachella? So they can look and feel really cute and trendy while they're there. How can I help them look and feel more cute and trendy while they're there with other things? Most sellers are not thinking this way at all. They're not even skimming the surface of this because they're so inwardly focused on themselves.
And I have a couple final questions for you. One, what's something that's been impactful on your journey? It could be like a book, podcast, anything that you feel like has really helped you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I have been an absolute personal development junkie since I was like 9. Like, I've only ever read nonfiction books. I'm always into personal development and mindset stuff. And I think that being really strong and mentally tough is first and foremost what everybody should be focusing on, because you can have all the business strategy, and if you're not mentally tough, it's gonna cave. So between opening my shop for the first like 5 years, I listened to Gary Vee, of course, for years. Like, I would always have him on in the background just because his energy was really encouraging. I don't listen to him as much anymore, but it really, really was helpful for me to listen to sort of like his stance on business. And he has like the wolf mentality, right? It's just like, you go for things, you try, you be confident, you don't care about failure, all that sort of stuff. I'm a huge fan of Abraham Hicks on YouTube, which they do like manifestation stuff, energy, manifestation and mindset books. My top favorite, I have three: Relentless by Tim Grover, The Obstacle is the Way by, his name is escaping me, but if you Google it, you'll find it. Obstacle is the Way and Unfuck Yourself. I love that one. So those are my top three. I think like for newbies, it will help you get into that wolf mentality of like mental toughness and just awareness, self-awareness, and ability to fight through learning curves to get to what you want. So I love those three. And I think that's it. Gary Vee, like the big ones that helped me get through everything. And I've read all of those books and listened to them on Audible multiple times. Gabby Bernstein as well, with a lot of her mindset manifestation stuff. Amanda Francis, she has a stellar book, Rich as Fuck, that I also really, really love. I could go on and on. I've always had like spirituality mentors, business mentors. I am such a big proponent of having somebody teach you how to get to where you want to go. And I don't think that ever ends. So yes, I'm telling people to work with me, hire me, help, let me help you get to where you want to go. But simultaneously, I'm hiring people to work with me and help me get to where I want to go that have already been there. I think it's always just like, you're always stretching upwards to get more resources to take you higher and to elevate you to that next level.
Yeah, I love those recommendations. Big Gary Vee fan as well. And the final question that I have for you is, if you were to go back in time and talk to your 20-year-old self, would you want to tell her anything? Or if you want to tell her nothing at all, that's an option as well.
Yeah, I think what I would tell her is something that has resonated with me so hard for so long. And it is a quote, I don't even know where I heard it at this point, but it's a quote that says 90% of the work is softening around what is, which means the majority of your work is just accepting where you are. So a mantra I tell my students all the time is, I am where I am and I'm on my way up. It's being able to accept wherever you're at and acknowledging that you're making progress every day with baby steps. So 90% of the work is softening around where you are. It means I accept where I am and I'm soft about it. I'm not beating myself up. I'm not asking, why am I not further? I'm realizing that where I am is perfect and I'm on the exact right trajectory I need to be on to get to where I want to go. I just have to be gentle with myself and I have to listen to my intuition and I have to take the steps that I feel are the next right steps for me and not try to skip the line. I just have to go baby step by baby step every single day, dependent on however I feel and whatever I feel is best for me in that moment.
I love that quote.
Me too.
So powerful. It's such a good reminder to be soft with yourself as well, because it's so easy to be hard on yourself. Be like, why am I not there yet? What's going on?
Yeah, and it's not helpful. That's part of what makes people quit. We talked about that learning curve. Part of what makes people quit in those first couple steps or stages in the learning curve is they're beating themselves up so hard. It feels bad. It feels horrible. The reason I was able to get to six figures so quickly is because the whole time I was having fun. I was never focused on results, so I couldn't beat myself up about anything. I didn't even know six-figure shops existed. I didn't know it was possible. So I just started and I was like, ooh, this is awesome. Galaxy shorts, Galaxy fanny packs, Galaxy headbands. What else do you want? And it felt like I was playing. It never felt like work. And I think that's a huge part of it is if you're playing, you can't beat yourself up because you're not falling short of anything. You're just experimenting and playing around and enjoying yourself the whole time.
I'm thinking of what ways can we bring more play back into our life, into our work, into our store?
Yeah,
like how can we make that the forefront?
I talk about this constantly. I think it's really ingrained in us to not enjoy our work. In college, in school, in 9-to-5s, we're literally trained to think that if we're having fun, we must not be productive. We must not be being productive. If we're enjoying ourselves, we must be doing something wrong. We must be cheating, right? I just talked about this yesterday in one of my group coaching calls because we were talking about research and it came up that a lot of people will feel guilty spending time on Instagram researching because it feels like you're playing on your phone. And a lot of times if you're doing it correctly, it feels so fun. You can do it for hours and like the time just goes by like that. And a lot of people, A, feel really guilty and B, feel like they're not actually doing anything productive. They're like, it can't be productive if I'm having so much fun. Being able to have the level of self-awareness to identify that, first of all, it's just not true. Like, you can be more productive while having fun. You can be more creative. You can create more results when you're enjoying yourself than anything else. So it's more so than programming. It's a deprogramming that needs to happen in understanding that fun is actually a huge unlock for so many things. You can open up so much of your own potential by taking things so much more lightly.
Such a great point to end on. I'm glad that you brought that up. And thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for sharing with us.
Of course.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Thank you. And where can we find you? Where can we connect with you online?
Yeah, so Instagram's probably the best place. Like I said, it's just Be A Wolf Biz, BEAWOLFBIZ. And then I also have a free Mastermind Print On Demand Facebook group. If you just search Be A Wolf Biz on Facebook, you can join there for free as well. I think there's almost 6,000 people in there at this point. It's like the best community ever. There's no negativity. There's no like salesy stuff. There's no complaining. I don't allow it. It's literally the best group you can join. It's such a great resource.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I'd love if you could share it with a friend who you think would benefit from this episode. And I'll see you soon.